Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Technoprobe's conference call, chaired by Richard Mohs, CEO, and Laurent Carozzi, CFO. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. If you would like to register a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad. Just to remind you all, this conference is being recorded. During this conference call, statements could be made that constitute forward-looking statements based on management's current expectation and belief are subject to a number of risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results to differ materially from the future results expressed, forecasted, or implied by such forward-looking statements. For a more complete list and description of such risks and uncertainties, we refer to Technoprobe's filing with the French Autorité des Marchés Financiers. I would like now to hand over the call to Richard Mohs. Sir, please go ahead.
Thank you very much, and good afternoon, everybody. So thank you very much for attending the call, first of all. We're announcing today that we've reached agreement in principle on a financial restructuring plan for Technicolor, and we believe that this plan is going to provide a framework for long-term sustainability for the group. We've just issued a press release. I realize it contains a lot of information. It's 9 pages long, but the essence is that this plan that we've put together is supported by a majority of our lenders. It's ready to be voted on by our shareholders and then to be finalized by the courts for implementation. So I'm going to run through the key components of the plan and of the announcement, and then Laurent will go into more details, and then we'll both be ready to answer your questions. So if we start on slide number 3, which is entitled A Comprehensive Financial Restructuring Plan to Enhance Strategic Flexibility, as we previously communicated to you, back in May, we began a process aiming to raise a new money facility. And the important thing to say today is that we have secured 420 million euros in new financing, and the money will be used to finance our operations and initially to repay the $110 million bridge loan facility, which is due on July the 31st. Associated with this new money input is going to be the partial equitization of our debt up to a level of 660 million euros. And this is going to be achieved through two simultaneous steps. First of all, there will be a 330 million euro rights issue with shareholders preferential subscription rights. And secondly, there will be a 330 million euros reserve capital increase for the term loan B and RCF creditors, which will be fully subscribed by way of debt equitization. We're also agreeing to extend the maturity of the Term Loan B and the RCF to 2024, and our existing Wells Fargo facility, which will continue in being out to December 2023. So obviously, what this means is that we will be significantly reinforcing our shareholders' equity and at the same time significantly reducing our debt burden. In fact, we anticipate that by 2021, our debt-to-equity ratio will be close to 3 times, which we think will be a very positive signal for all of our stakeholders, customers, suppliers, employees, and rating agencies. To implement this new financing structure, we today opened a procédure de sauvegarde accélérée, or SFA, which is a form of pre-negotiated safeguard procedure with financial creditors only. And as we mentioned in a previous update, this allows us to move forward with our plan, only needing a two-thirds majority of approval from impacted lenders, and that we have already obtained. There's then going to be an important next step, which is to get the approval of our shareholders. And this will take place as a vote during an extraordinary general meeting, which will be held on the 20th of July. We feel very confident about the outcome of the vote. The plan is designed to offer to existing shareholders the opportunity to participate in Technicolor's recovery and long-term value creation, and in particular, free warrants will give access to 5% of the share capital of the company on a fully diluted basis. We think a negative vote is a remote possibility, but nevertheless, it's out there. If that happened, then it would lead to rehabilitation proceedings, a redressement judiciaire, or liquidation, under which all of the company's assets could be attributed or sold to the new financing lenders. So effectively, we would end up in the same position, but via a different route. We very much believe that we will achieve this via the first route, which is a positive vote of shareholders at the extraordinary general meeting. So whilst we've been doing this, and it's a very important day in the history of the company, achieving this restructuring plan, nevertheless, our teams have been fully engaged across each of our three business units in delivering high-quality services to our customers, and this will not change the experience that those customers receive. We intend to provide them with high-quality goods and services as we have in the past. But nevertheless, in the future, we'll be executing that from a much stronger platform. So with that, I will hand it over to Laurent, and he's going to go through these issues in some more detail and also talk about details of our new three-year business plan. Over to you, Laurent.
Many thanks, Rich. Good afternoon. Good morning, all. So in the following slides, I will take you through the details of the operation. I will try to do it as slowly and as clearly as I can, because as Richard has mentioned, you've been delivered a stack of financial data in a very short period of time, so it's going to be complicated to digest. So I hope I'm going to be able to take you through the details. So starting with the slide 4 called Key Transaction Principles, here we have a summary of the operation, and then I will take you through again through the details of each step of the operation. So overall, as Richard has mentioned, so we are talking about several steps. The first step is a new money cash injection. The total amount will be 420 million. It's going to be debt with a maturity running till June 2024. 400 million of these 420 is fully underwritten by a group of lenders, which are mainly part of today's term loan and RCF creditors. And we have also on top of that 20 million provided to us by BPI France Participation, who's actually, as you know, a shareholder and who has a board seat. The proceeds of these 420 will be used, as Richard has mentioned, to repay the $110 million bridge loan that is due to for payment at the end of July 2020, and also to, of course, fund the large the cash flow swings we have, and help rebuild the buffer of liquidity that we were pursuing, operation we were pursuing while we were doing the rights issue, and that we will do it this way now. The second step, the second part of what we are announcing today, is the project of the debt reduction of 660 million euro of debt across the term loan, Term Loan B and the RCF on a pari passu basis. So it's a very, very significant debt reduction, leading to reinstated debt, remaining debt of 572 million as far as the Term Loan and RCF part was concerned. How is that going to be done? By, as Richard has mentioned, a two-step project, a rights issue project. So one, and I will give you a bit more detail, would be a 330 million euro rights issue, backstop or underwritten by the TLB and RCF creditors, and with including a commitment of BPI to participate pro rata, their current shareholding. And another of the same size, 330 million, a reserve capital increase to reserve to the TLB and RCF creditors. the proceeds of this rights issue will be used to repay the debt at par. The maturity of the new financing of the reinstated debt, so the 572 million remaining, been extended to December 2024. So you have a debt to equity swap here and an extension of the maturity of the remaining debt. The payment would be, last point, made as a bullet payment, repayment in December 2024. Last but not the least, as you know, we also we're using also an ABL line with Wells Fargo, amounting to $125 million. This line has been reconducted, extended to December 2023. So as a summary, if you look on your slide on the right-hand side, you will see that in blue colors on the left, you have our current situation today. So we have, in terms of gross debt, 1.4 billion of debt made of 982 million of term loan. This amount fluctuates slightly sometimes because, as you know, there is a dollar tranche in it. So depending on the day you calculate it with the dollar to euro exchange, it changes mildly, but it's insignificant in terms of a magnitude. So 982 for the term loan, 250 million euro for the RCF, 110 million for the dollars for the bridge, and $125 million for Wells Fargo. Tomorrow, we will have, so right hand side of the chart, 125 million of Wells Fargo, same amount but extended to December 2023, the 420 million euro of new financing with maturity date in June 24, and the reinstated debt, the 572 million of reinstated TLB and RCF debts with a bullet repayment plan for December 24. So if we progress by one slide, so if we go to slide number five, I'm going to give you a little bit more color on the capital increase part of the operation. So that's the part that is concerning the reduction of the debt to equity swap. So in total, we have 660 million euro of a debt to equity swap plan and in two tranches. So the first part is the more classic rights issue open to all shareholders. So total amount 330 million. The strike price will be 2.98 euro per share. It's the entirety of this rights issue is underwritten by the Term Loan B and the RCF lenders, pro rata. The use of proceeds will be, of course, to repay the debts, the Term Loan and RCF cumulated debt at par. And again, as noted, we can count already on the support of one of our key shareholder BPI to participate pro rata in this rights issue. And I remind you that BPI has today a board seat and will retain its board seat going forward. There will be a second tranche, the same size, 330 million reserved this time. So the price will be 3.58. The rationale between 3.58 and 2.98 is simply that the reserve capital increase price is higher by 20% than the price offered to the current shareholders. The subscribers of the reserve capital increase will be the Term Loan B and the RCF lenders. Proceeds will be used, of course, to repay the debt. No cash will be involved, but it will be the settlement will be done by set of claims. So that's for the capital increase. Let's see now in slide six what sort of impact this rights issue will have, let's say, on our share ownership. And I will have also, beyond this explanation, a few more information to the deal. So first, the new information. First of all, and that's highlighted under the point number two, and Richard alluded to it, penny warrants will be distributed to existing shareholders. They will represent in total a value of 5% of the fully diluted equity. They will have a four-year maturity, and the strike price will be at the RCI, the reserve capital increase price, so 3.58. So information, new information number one. Information number two, it's point number three, an amount of 7.5% of the equity will be preserved, attached to the new money lender as part of the payment for their overall package. Now, going back to now trying to take you to ownership. So what I suggest is we start from the left-hand side of the spreadsheet. So you can see excluding shareholder warrants. So let's have a look at what the share ownership could look like, excluding shareholders' warrants impact. So in the first column, you see a 0%. It means that let's assume that nobody subscribes to the share issue, to the rights issue. So 0%. As it stands today, current shareholders will be then diluted down to 6.5% of their current holding. If you go down below, we have it basically means that the rest of the rights issue will be picked up by the TL, the term loan and lenders and the RCF. So adding 46.9% to the stake, if I'm grabbing 46.9% of the equity, then you will have the amount that is coming from the reserved capital increase of 39.1%. So if none of our current shareholders subscribe, in total, they would hold at the end of this process 6.5%. We will have the term loan and RCF or lenders will own 86%. 7.5% will be reserved to the new money provider. I step the 50% because you will understand the logic. I go to 100%. So let's assume that we have all our current shareholders do subscribe to the rights issue. So going down the column, they will subscribe to 330 million. So they have today, the remaining shares are equivalent to 6.5% of the new capital structure. They would add 46.9%, so to a total of 53.4%. Our lenders will still retain 39.1%. That's the amount that is associated to the reserve capital increase. And of course, we still have the 7.5% attached to the new money. Now, moving from this picture that excludes warrants to the one that includes warrants, and let me take you straight through the last column. So with 100% pickup, so warrants overall will dilute every position. So the existing shareholders will be slightly diluted on their core asset to 6.2%. But if they do subscribe to the rights issue, they will add 44.6% plus 5% coming from the warrants. So they will end up a little bit short of 56%. Lenders would have an equity stake of 37.1%, and the equity attached to the new money would be 7.1%. So I think this sort of spreadsheet gives you more or less a proper and comprehensive view on what the potential dilution can be if no participation in rights issue is contemplated, or if it is contemplated or if half of the subscription is happening. Moving on to the slide 7, here we are going to, it's called new money facilities. So here we are going to provide you with a little more information on the new money facility, the 420 million. So as mentioned, there is a 400 of that is coming from creditors and 20 from BPI. There is a euro and a US tranche. The US tranche is mainly dedicated at refinancing the $110 million bridge facility that we have. This line is fully underwritten by a group of existing term loan and RCF lenders. Now, the price. So there is an underwriting fee of 3.5% that is going to be contemplated, and it's under an OID format, which basically means that it's going to be paid on the totality, but at the end of the process, so at the end of 24. The participants will be Term Loan B lenders and RCF lenders. The use of proceeds are, as mentioned, first the bridge loan and then the general operational purposes. The maturity is June 2024 in bullet payments, so in payment in one go. Prepayment non-call for 3 years, so no prepayment for 3 years, and then prepayment will be done at par. If we were to make some disposal in between, we will retain 75 million euro on the balance sheet as a cash, as a sort of extra security to the plan, and 125 million could be applied in terms of prepayment, but with a 6% redemption premium to be paid. Now the margins. So on top of the underwriting fees, now there is an OID again at 5% that is being applied to this facility, and then as you can see for the Euro tranche and for the US tranche, we are going to be based on the Euribor with the floor at zero and the LIBOR floor at zero, which means that if they go negative, it should be accounted for at zero. As far as the Euro tranche is concerned, there is a 6% cash interest plus a 6% payment in kind contemplated as well. So payment in kind meaning that it will be paid at the end, at the maturity. Same with the US tranche. And finally, there's a commitment fee of 1.5% per annum in case the line is not utilized. Finally, we have the 7.5% of equity allocation I've described to you in the previous slide. So this gives you basically the structure of the new money facility. It's been designed to make sure that in the years of recovery, 2021 and 22, let's say there is a clever weight of interest being applied on the business plan, so that basically this new money facility doesn't impair or prevent the company from recovering as it should. If I move to the slide 8, so we've talked about the new money, the 420. Now let's talk about the reinstated debt of 172 million. So we know its origin. These are the existing Term Loan B and RCF amount. They are reminded to you on the left-hand side of the chart. Now, so you will have this amount, reinstated amount of 172 million would be, there's going to be a euro tranche, 153 million euro. And you have the split coming from TLB and RCF, and a US tranche of 120 million. Its maturity is December 24, with a bullet repayment then. And as far as the margins are concerned, for the euro tranche, same mechanism really in terms of structure, though not in terms of amount, but in terms of structure than for the new money. So a Euribor with a floor at 0%, 3% cash interest, 3% peak for the euro tranche. And as far as the US dollar tranche is concerned, LIBOR with a floor at zero, 2.75 cash interest and 3% peak. So moving on to the slide 9, let me give you some more color on the way these operations will unfold. So the new money will be made available in July, in mid-July, in order to for the company to basically repay the bridge. And the amount of new money that's going to be made available in July is to the token of 240 million euro. It's going to be dedicated to repair the bridge on one hand and to help us, let's say, manage our buffer of needed buffer of liquidity in relation to our work cap swings, as you know. There is going to be another tranche of new money being released later in August 2020. This new money will be, of course, is benefiting some of some securities. The process used is called the fiducie sûreté in French, so it's like it's a trust, let's say, in French, and whereby we will have a certain amount of subsidiaries, in particular, in relation to products and services, being regrouped under this fiducie and used as a security to the new money providers. They will also, the new money provider will also benefit from some securities that were so far granted to the bridge lenders, because they will replace them de facto in terms of beneficiaries of these securities. That's more or less, I think, where I should leave you. We can, of course, answer more of your questions if need be. Let me take you then to the slide 10 with the calendar. So it's called Key Next Steps, but it's in reality a little bit of the calendar that we are going to have to follow. So today marks the day of the opening of the SFA, so the Sauvegarde Financière Accélérée. By the 29th of June, we would be asking to call for an EGM, and we saw publishing an EGM meeting notice. As you know, we are requested to have an EGM, to call an EGM in because of these, in particular, because of the debt to equity swap operations. On July 3rd, we will have the traditional financial creditor committee. Now we'll have to vote on the SFA plan, and as Richard has mentioned, we need a two-thirds majority, which is already gathered. In July 10th, we will have hopefully a prospectus approved by the EMF, and we have decided to add to it an independent expert report to assess the fairness of the operation, and on that date, the publication of the EGM convening notice will be also performed. Sometime around mid-July, the debt is not completely set. There's going to be a first drawdown on the new money, as I've mentioned, of 240 million, used to for the repayment of the bridge and to address the liquidity needs of the company. The plan is to have on July 20 the EGM, to have the EGM take place on July 20, and it will have to basically approve the capital increases operations and the fiducie, the trust implementation required to secure the balance of the new money that would haven't been yet put on the balance sheet of the company. At the end of July, we expect to have the court approval for the SFA plan. It's of course subject to the financial creditors' favorable vote of two-thirds, and also to the favorable vote of the EGM. Following that, at the end of August, we expect to perform a second drawdown on the new money facility, it's 180 million. And of course, we need here to have the approval of the SFA plan or a continuation plan approved by the court. If we do not have this SFA plan, as Richard has mentioned, we will go through the alternative route and recollect this amount of money, but by simply having provided that all the group's assets would have been then sold to the benefit of the lenders as part of the recovery process. In September, if we are in the after in the route A, so the EGM has voted favorably to the project of capital increase, this is when we should be launching the process of the capital increase and the allocation of the warrants. Voilà. So these are the key steps that are ahead of us. Apologies for having a bit long, but I think it's important to probably to take you slowly through these elements, because they are quite complex to absorb in a very short period of time. But of course, we'd be happy to help through the Q&A session. Let me now take you, and I will do that probably briefly, and be happy to go back to that with via questions. Let me take you now back to slide 12 of the presentation. It's called Key Figures. So what you should be aware of is that in order for our lenders to assess their willingness to do the operation and assess the way they want to structure this operation, they have been working on some assumptions we've provided them with. These assumptions now need to be cleansed, and they are presented to you. So you have on this chart, on the left-hand side, something called the base case, and on the right-hand side, the high case. So let me just give you one or two words of explanation of what's in there. For those of you who remember, we were embarked into a process of a rights issue. We had built up a three-year plan. We had a guidance for 2020, a guidance for 2022. We had a capital market day, but that was prior COVID. Now, obviously, COVID has disrupted our activity. It's still actually disrupting it. And that makes the possibility for us to have a single guidance for the year very complicated. So we build up these two scenarios. And I'm going to give you the key assumptions behind these two. If you think of Technicolor, one thing that the COVID crisis has made appear is that the businesses of Technicolor are not only resilient, but actually probably in some cases quite critical to the new world. In particular, if we look at Connected Home, the strategy and the redirection towards broadband gateway accesses has proven to be key. Over the period, in the base case of Connected Home looks pretty much like the budget we presented to you before entering into this COVID crisis. And why that? Despite the fact that there were some disruption in the business because of some delay in manufacturing while China, well, main or the bulk of our manufacturers and suppliers are based were blocked. The Asian markets have reopened. The production has resumed. And the demand has never been that high, in particular in North America, but also in the rest of the world. So the demand for Connected Home product is very, very, very strong. And basically that explains why in such a complicated year, Connected Home will deliver, we believe, in the base case, that's the assumption we have in the base case, its original business plan. DVD, of course, will suffer from the fact that in 2020, we have a lot less new releases. Theaters have been up until recently shut down, so a lot of the new movie releases have been postponed. Therefore, basically, we didn't sell any new releases, DVD, Blu-ray, over the period, and Q2, Q3 are expected to be very, very low in that respect. But what this crisis has revealed is a craving, I don't know, or a strong demand for back catalog. And therefore, catalog sales have held on very well. So indeed, in 2020, the DVD division will be affected by basically the crisis. That's for sure. But the impact will be not that significant, and probably the recovery, backed up by the continuation of our renewal and policy or renewal contract, will continue and we do plan on a good recovery in 21. The third division is really where you should focus your attention when you want to take a view on our base case versus our high case, and that's production services. Production services, as you recall, have had a star year, an extraordinary year in 2019. but obviously, live shooting in Hollywood, in the rest of the world, has completely stopped since the start of the COVID crisis, so interrupting completely your activity. So we were expecting before a low first half as far as a film and episodic were concerned. But we were expecting to have a strong second half. At the moment, in the base case, our core assumption is that the lockdown will ease, allowing film to be shot again, only in October, September, October. It seems that it might be a little prudent, and that the noise is that it might happen a bit before, but still, at the moment, that's the assumption you have under the base case. Under the high case, is a bit more optimistic. It's planning on the reopening of the activity for the studios over the summer. As you know, as far as Technicolor is concerned and film and episodic, we need the studio to reopen first, to start to shoot pictures first before we work. So even if the studio reopened over the summer or in September, we won't be working much or simultaneously. You will have to wait 3-4 months before we getting the pictures so that we can work on these. So in the base case, the main reason for the very strong drop in EBITDA, and as you can see in 2020, we're planning 160 and 70 million in the base case, 255 in the high case, is around the very low activity at film and episodic. This activity is expected to resume, but gradually through 2021 because of the timeline, and helping the entire group to go back up to 340 before hitting 425 in 2022. So you can see we're planning on quite a strong recovery over 2021 and 22. Beyond the recovery of film and episodic, it is of importance to notice that the growth at Connected Home is planned to be as it was planned in the original budget and continue, driven by its good growth in broadband and its continued cost reduction efficiencies measure being implemented. And for the entire group, by the way, as you know, we had two efficiency plans called Panorama 1 and Panorama 2. What we've done since we last spoke to you is Panorama 1, 150 million in total, has been accelerated is, I should say, in the bag now, 100%. And Panorama 2 has been extended and accelerated, so same tokens, 150 million, and is being implemented. So that explains why you have a recovery also of the margin. We haven't been betting heavily on the top line, as you can see, in the base case, a little bit more in the high case. So we think it remains prudent. But clearly the transformation plan are bringing profit here on top of the natural growth and recovery of the businesses. The high case versus the base case is, in summary, a faster recovery of FEV. I haven't said too much about advertising, but advertising is the same idea. The high case plan on a faster recovery starting earlier in Q3, Q4 than in the base case, and the continuation of the plan being delivered. As far as film and episodic is concerned, in the base case, our new 2023 year matches more or less the old 2022. So we think that the crisis, if we are under the assumptions of the base case, will delay the plan by overall 1 year. Free cash flow will be negative in 2020. Basically, the bulk of the negativity comes from the drop in the female episodic activity to the 80-90% of it. It could be a lot less if we were to resume growth earlier, as shown in the high case. Currently, and the point today is not really to deliver a trading update, but to give you some color, and I'm sure Richard will comment further on that. We are now in June, so April and May we've seen trading in line or better than the base case. So it seems that we are actually tracking reasonably well in the base case, and we are at the depth of the COVID crisis. What these plans do not take into account, of course, it'll be the impact of the second COVID wave or anything like that. So we still remain in uncertain times. The base case seems to us to be today reasonably, and I'm very modest in what I'm saying, reasonably robust, and is really this is really the one we are tracking on a week, day-to-day, week-per-week basis, knowing that the high case is also a possibility. Now, in order to leave some time for the questions, I won't go through the following slides. They give you a little bit more color on the trading per division, but I'm sure you'll have questions. I think we have a hard stop in 20 minutes, but of course we will be available if you have more questions for past this call. So with that, Richard, I hand over back to you.
Yeah, thank you very much, Laurent. So we've got a very comprehensive restructuring plan, which we've run through there with you briefly. It's been approved by more than two-thirds of our creditors, which means we'll be able to implement it under the SFA procedure, which started today, and pending the approval of shareholders at our extraordinary general meeting on the 20th of July. So this has all been pulled together in a very short time, and I think it's a great achievement on the part of all those involved. Technicolor has got some very valuable assets in each of its three main business units, and we fully intend to exploit them to their full potential now against the backdrop of this much stronger balance sheet platform which we're establishing for ourselves. So with that, I'll turn it over to you for questions.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. If you wish to ask a question by phone, please press 01 on your telephone keypad. We have a first question from David Cerdan from Kepler Cheuvreux. Sir, please go ahead.
Yeah, good evening, gentlemen. Few questions for you. My first question is regarding the business we could have in H1 and versus H2. Can we have an idea of how much you expect revenues to be per division in 2020, or which kind of business decline you expect for 2020 division by division? And the same question for the profitability division by division for 2020. My second question is regarding the rebound you expect. Is it correct to say that roughly by 2022 you are quite confident in going back to improve the situation compared with 2019? And it's difficult for us to imagine that in 2022 you will be so high compared to the situation in 2020. So have you got, for example, some information about the pipeline of your clients, something like that could be supportive for the base case? Thank you.
Do you want to take that, Laurent?
Yeah, okay. So David, I'll try to... I think basically what you're asking for is for me to give you a bit more color per division, 20 versus 21, and then comment on 22. So let's say if I, and one, we are not going, the plan is not really to give you specific, and again, these are not guidances, but specific details per division, but I give you some color around that so you can actually streamline your model. So if we start with connected home, and here I'm going to use So in 2020, basically we expect our sales to be in the base case, and the base case is contemplating sales to be slightly off by a few percent from last year. The reason being, as I've told you, we think that we're going to there are still some delays due to the start of the COVID crisis, but the demand is catching up quite strongly. So slight decline, and I would say, without giving you too much color on that, but the sort of a gentle growth in over 21 over 20, 22 over 21, you know, a few percentage points, not much. Basically, broadband continuing its growth versus video, probably continuing its decline. I think here, honestly, you should refer to the plan we had in the capital market day. That's more or less the same. Has mentioned to you, and I know you are covering us very 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 closely. So. I trust you had already some good forecasts for the budget 2021 and 22 we had at the time of the capital market day. I think in the base case, as I've mentioned, you shouldn't derive from there. We might do a little bit sales, as I've mentioned, because of the drop in 2020, but what happened is that we've accelerated our transformation plan, and also the cost of key components remains, let's say, reassuringly flat slash at a low level. So so I would say no real change in terms of no real change as far as the connected home is concerned. So brief comment on DVD. DVD in 2020 should be affected top line. That's you know, if you look at the cumulative sales we are proposing in the base plan, you have let's say you should assume that our classic 10% to 20% in volume decline will be surpassed. So we will be volume wise declining by a lot more than 20%. So you should be higher than that in terms of your decline. That's mainly exactly due to the drop is mainly due to the difference of two things. One, no new releases as far as Blu-ray are concerned and DVD are concerned because of a lack of new movie releases, but partially only compensated by solid growth in terms of catalog sales. We do expect because of the depth, because you know if you drop down further than 20% in 2020, you will expect to have a little rebound in 2021. We will have the new releases will come back, so we will have probably a positive year then before resuming to the sort of a classic decline we have experienced in the past. As far as the EBITDA or the EBITDA is concerned, without being too precise, 2020 will be affected. You recall that we were at pre-IFRS, huh? We were at 47 million in 19, so let's say close to 50 million. You should expect us to do less than half of that in the base case in 2020. But before basically going back up, because as you know, two things, we will be recouping some sales, as I've mentioned, and in particular in terms of new movie releases. And you know that these ones usually have a huge part of Blu-ray associated to these, and we have better margins there. Second element, because we're continuing the implementation of our policy of renewing the contract we have with the studios, and they are increasingly beneficiary to our activity. So that will come and help. And three, as a result of Richard's acceleration of our transformation plan, there are also some, we accelerated the level of transformation here. So we should go back, maybe not to the token or where we were planning to be in the original budget, but not too far really, and probably at par in 2022. So that leaves me with a complex division to command, that is production services. Now, production services, if you recall, in 19 was 900 million of sales, and we during the Capital Market Day we alluded to the fact that a little less than that was linked to female episodic. So, you know, without being too cute, female episodic is in between 400 and 450 million sales. Now, this level won't be there in 2020. As we said, it's that division doesn't barely work through this year, so it will more than halve in terms of revenue in the base case. And again, be very prudent. We are in the base case, and we are still in the midst of COVID. So this is based on the fact that we are going to have some modest activity coming back at the end of the year, before resuming gradually through H1 next year. But it could be better, it could be worse. We are here providing some, we hope prudent guidances. Obviously, we expect a recovery in 21. We won't be at the level of 19. Why? Because with the timeline around the film production, it's likely that we won't be at peak production in H1 2021. So that will take its time before it finds its way in H2. And we will be probably closer to the level of 2022 then. To your question, how do we know? Look, it's simple. The demand for product from studios to streamer has never been that high. The level of subscriptions to the Netflix streamers in the US is at all-time high and is pushing extremely strongly in Europe, in the rest of the world. They are craving for product. They are desperate not to have enough product. So we know that basically the pipeline will be strong and maybe even stronger than what we were expecting. With a special angle to Europe and Asia, where they are witnesses the strongest surge in demand. At the moment, we could produce, but they cannot, you know, deliver pictures. So we are on hold. But it's obvious that all the conversations with the studios and the streamers are really on the positive side and very aggressive. What I'm saying here is true to a lesser degree to advertising. Our advertising team has managed to hold on to its activity brilliantly because, as you know, we do CG, computer graphics. So we use special effects, so we don't need to have live people or we can put people in specific locations sometimes. So they resisted very, very well this year. And again, the demand for what they do is very strong. I will stop that by just highlighting the fact that for animation and game, same story. You know, there is an increased demand, and if anything, COVID has boosted the demand coming from the streamers. And so in our business mix, different from what we described to you 2 or 3 months ago, and that's the main impact of the crisis, we believe that our mix of activity will be more skewed towards streamers than studios. Voilà. Sorry, long answer to your question, but you're contemplating 3 years of a scenario. And again, you know, a word of caution, this is a base case. This is a base case that is done now. We are in the middle of a corona crisis, so everybody has got to be prudent with this sort of a set of numbers.
Mm-hmm. It's very clear. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question comes from Jeremy Lerns from Fidelity. Sir, please go ahead.
Hi, good evening to both of you. It's not lost on me, obviously, the last few months, I'm sure, have been incredibly stressful, and you've put this together, I'm sure, relatively quickly. But it's disappointing, and I don't know if we're going to receive more information. It's disappointing not to see some reconciliation regarding the amount of cash out for restructuring and your expectation of the changes of working capital, which I think were also, you know, quite significant in the second half of last year. And in general, having covered Technicolor now for 2.5 years, is quite difficult to understand. So anything you can provide there would be much appreciated. Thank you.
Laurent, are you still there?
He has been disconnected. Just a minute.
Well, we will get back to you with an answer to that question.
It's okay. I don't think you ever like getting questions from me. But thank you.
For the moment, we have no more question. I'm connected, Mr. Carrizzi.
Hello.
Yes, Mr. Carrizzi, you are connected.
Laurent, did you catch everything I asked, or would you like me to repeat?
Sorry, I've been disconnected while you were starting your question. Apologies.
It was really just for some disclosure on the cash impacts. Obviously, you've given us adjusted numbers and a continuing FCF, which per the asterisk does not have the financing or tax cash charges attached. What the expected cash restructuring and cash working capital impacts are, how we should think about that. If you can, we can do that over email, but I mean, other people might be interested too.
Yes. Yes, I think it might be better to do it separately. For you to understand over the 2021st and 2022nd, I mean the way the deal has been structured is really to respect the interest payments that were expected previously. So you had a model previously and you had interest and cash interest charges. Really what the lenders have very cleverly done is to respect that pattern. So that is unchanged. As I've mentioned during my talk, a lot of the payments are OID or PIC, so they come in 24. So really, the cash interest profile shouldn't really change over the period, along in absolute terms, along the lines of this base case scenario. So you can model it the way you were modeling it before, and that's going to give you more. I mean, with the new assumptions, obviously, yeah. Of operational cash flow, but that would give it to you. The tax level, you know, I'm happy to, but you know, we were spending in the base case cash was, you know, 14 million in cash taxes. You know, we have nodes in the US and in Europe, so honestly, do not expect a lot more than that, a tiny bit more, but not a lot more. That's really not moving much. So cash and interest, well, I guess these were your questions.
It was really to, I mean, obviously the working capital balance, as I recall, was quite large and negative, and how that has evolved during these discussions. Obviously, this presentation is centered on the debt stack. If any color you can share on how your expectations to how your terms of trade working capital would change. Thank you.
Yes. So two ways to answer your question. First, you recall that at the capital market day, we explained that for the forthcoming plan, we were planning to reduce our payment terms from a level that was, you know, above 115 days down to a level of 90 days, which including 20 days of equal term means 70. That seems to be to us the norm in the market. This is we're planning the same. So this hasn't changed. Really, you know, it's mainly linked to connected home. So if you were to, I don't know how you model your, you put up your modeling together, but as far as Connectome is concerned, you should expect to have a negative workup in 2020 for Connectome, but less obviously than in 19, but a bit more than what you had probably at the time of the budget, because we are going to have slightly less sales this year with sales delays, and you know, sales obviously do have an impact cash-wise on working cap, but not, you know, a negative movement here, but not huge. Reduction also at HES, but to the token of, you know, 10 million, so it's not big. At production services, we would be harmed, and in particular versus our past budget, 2020 budget. Why? Because at the end of the year, in the previous budget, we were expecting to be, one, finishing the full swing H2 semester of activity, so having milestones being paid to us on the full swing of activity, and secondly, being ahead of an H1 2021 of very strong activity, so benefiting from down payments. Now, in our current plan, the first leg, we don't think we're going to have it, because we think we are going to resume work, but modestly in the base case in Q4, and that the roster for 2021 will be much less than the previous year. So production services will be more affected. If we look at the global picture of work up in 2019, so we were negative, we were a little bit short of negative 100 million. We were planning, despite the fact that we were reducing payment terms, to improve that quite a bit in 2020, we won't have this in the base case. We don't plan on this reduction. We will have a modest reduction to that, but not, you know, not to the token of what we were hoping. But obviously, that will accelerate in 21 and 22 quite dramatically, with in particular the recovery of production services, point one, and point two, the fact that year after year, because of reducing our payment terms, the negative hit on our workup is reducing. So that will really reduce starting in 21 and 22. So 2020 negative, but not as much as 19 for two reasons that I gave you.
Okay, so payment terms have not continued to worsen, despite obviously what's been going on is a key message.
Yes, but we had planned, basically, it's a bit awkward with Technicolor, but as you know, we had planned before ahead to reduce on a voluntary fashion on payment terms. So we had already some plan in the first part of the year, and that's what we were forecasting. Yes, we've had some in some divisions, we've had some suppliers that asked us to reduce further. They were a little bit confused about, you know, the rights issue, the previous announcement. I think now we need to make them understand that our business is going to reemerge from there, as far as they are concerned, stronger than before, obviously. So I would say it's still, you know, more or less along the lines of what we had described to you before. Less contribution from PS, but that's not linked to payment terms. Payment terms have been, you know, a bit tougher, but we had planned for that to a degree. And I think the message we convey to our suppliers, and that they will clearly be able to witness with that, is that clearly the balance sheet of this company is structurally transformed by this operation. So we are a strong partner, and we will be a strong partner, a stronger partner even in the future. So that should help us to retune our payment terms where we want them to be without being pressurized in any form.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question comes from Fiona Oxford-Williams from Edison Group. Madam, please go ahead.
Thank you. Good evening. Actually, my main question was about the impact that all of this public negotiation has had on the supplier base. So I think that's a lot of that has been covered now. Could you just clarify the new money that's coming in, as well as repaying the 110 bridge, so general corporate purposes, is that the working capital buffer that we were talking before, or does that cover any of the investment that you need or may need as you have to scale up the production services to meet this onslaught of demand that hopefully will come through next year?
Well, if you want to rationalize it in a very simple way, you have 420. We need to repay the bridge, okay?
Yeah.
So let's say you have 100 of that is going away. So you end up with 300. Before, we were at 300, having to repay the bridge, going down to 200. Now,
yeah.
And the 200 was for the to manage your liquidity buffer. Now you're
yeah.
going to tell me, but now you have 100 million more. Yes, fine.
Yes.
I have 100 million less potentially of free cash flow. So that makes the bridge improperly.
Okay.
Between the two assumptions. But obviously, with the recovery, we expect all free cash flow. For 20 through 20, but more likely for the end of 20 and 21, then we might emerge with a larger buffer than previously. So to that respect, potentially, if we do deliver this plan, we should be better off.
Right. Okay. The other thing that I was just going to ask about, the debt holders who are not involved in this process, so the other one-third, presumably they have chosen not to participate, have they? Or can you just say something about that?
I don't think I'm really allowed to comment on that, except to say that you shouldn't draw these sort of conclusions too quickly.
Okay.
So I don't think really this is the mindset currently. I must say, and we should repeat, and I think the company is really grateful to its shareholders first, of course, but also to our lenders. They've been extremely supportive, extremely reactive, very fast, very efficient. There is a strong dynamism along this group that is evolving. Now, it's a very complex thing, so not everyone can be there on the 22nd of June. It doesn't mean that they won't be there later. So
okay.
Well, but I can't say more than that.
No, that's fine. I just had to ask a question.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay,
absolutely.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We have no more questions. So back to you for the conclusion.
Okay, well, thank you very much for your participation at such short notice. As you work your way through the press release and presentation, I'm sure you'll have more questions, but Laurent and I will be available to have one-on-ones with you or to respond by email as you see fit. But thank you for listening. I think this is a very positive development, and we look forward to a stronger future for the group. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes the conference call. Thank you all for your participation. You may now disconnect.